I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
On Twitter, I said on my Twitter thing, after Pompey won, I tweeted as a joke, Hassan Yebda is going to be the next entrant into the Dean Windass Hall of Fame. I got about six people going back saying, you can't do that. He's only got one goal.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. It is the Football Ramble. Enter and come and meet us.
It's just more and more bizarre.
In that order.
You're going to meet Pete first.
Yes, you are. You lucky men and girls.
And then you're going to meet Luke.
All right.
And James or Jim.
Charmed to make your acquaintance.
I'm going to ask a question.
Who are you?
I'm Marcus. I'm going to ask a question which is inspired by an email from Tom Goulding in light of all the penalty decisions that were given at the weekend, the bad decisions for given and not given. And I bring the question to you, gentlemen, what is the most ridiculous penalty decision you've seen given or not given?
I am going to go with when Ronald Koeman just pretty much rugby tackled David Platt, and it was given as a free kick, and Koeman wasn't sent off.
That was in the 93 World Cup qualifier. Yeah.
Tell that referee he's just cost me my job.
Yeah,
that's what Graham Taylor said, wasn't it?
Graham Taylor, yeah,
to a linesman, wasn't it? They did that documentary.
Was it the fourth official? It was a linesman, wasn't it? Because linesman was just ignoring him, wasn't he?
Yeah,
doing his job. Taylor went absolutely nuts.
Oh, so he should do that.
It was outrageous, though. It was possibly the worst decision of that kind.
Taylor said it's up to them whether they give a penalty or a free kick, but he shouldn't have been on the field.
Absolutely.
He scored a free kick as well after that.
What more can he possibly have done to get sent off? Just unbelievable.
Well, I don't understand.
Yeah.
Luke?
I'm probably going to go for the final of the World Cup in 1990.
Oh, yes.
I think it was Oscar Ruggeri, I think, brought down Jurgen Klinsmann. We didn't actually bring him down. It was one of the worst dives I've ever seen. and he slid in to tackle him, but sort of alongside him, didn't make any contact.
That's right, yeah.
It was on the side of the linesman as well. Can you boys remind me whether the linesman could actually flag for that sort of stuff then? Was that in the rules then?
I can't honestly remember, but...
Because he didn't flag,
yeah.
And then Bremer scored the penalty. It was in the 85th minute as
it
well.
Was, yeah,
it was,
yeah, 0-0. Because the Argentinians... I mean, it's unlike them to go mental anyway, but they were actually justified to go mad there.
It's cracking because it was...
And that final was the first time you saw a player got sent off in a World Cup.
It was
final.
The most...
I think they had two sent off, actually.
I was about to say it was the most ill-disciplined Argentinian performance I've ever seen. There's so many bookings and the old red card as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And when they went to swap shirts at the end, Alf Ramsey ran on and went, no, no!
No, you're doing it, yeah. No.
Animals. Yeah, Pete.
Marlon Harewood at the weekend, Marcus. Hey. It was disgraceful, yeah. A little bit closer to now, the present.
Yeah.
Yeah,
what about Mark Wilson for Pompey? Definitely not a pen.
Wow.
Definitely not a pen. That was one of the most outrageous handballs I've ever seen, but we'll take it.
For the Newcastle one, I enjoyed Mick Lowe's going mental on BBC Radio Newcastle. I rarely get to listen to BBC Radio Newcastle.
Yeah.
Oh, lovely stuff it was.
Well, I'm going to go for when Robbie Fowler skipped over David Seaman's arms at Highbury, and even he said to the referee, no, that wasn't a penalty.
Yeah. And he got it. Is that when McAteer smashed in the rebound?
Yeah, he did, yeah. Fowler hit it and Seaman saved it, and then McAteer scored the rebound.
Yeah, yeah. I think a dishonorary mention has to go to the German goalkeeper Schumacher as well, when he nearly took Patrick Battiston's head off.
Yeah.
It wasn't inside the box, I don't think.
No, but it was just such a shocking foul. It was so dangerous.
He broke his jaw. He broke his jaw and knocked two of his teeth out, and he was unconscious, and the ref gave a goal kick.
It's unbelievable.
Horrifying. He earned that goal kick.
Yeah.
His broken jaw.
Yeah. Oh, it was a lovely little goal kick. But the weekend, gentlemen, has passed. And Portsmouth won a game.
Blimmin', brilliant, eh?
Eh?
Even a blind squirrel occasionally finds a nut.
All right.
Do you know, I mean, Pompey haven't actually been playing that badly, so I think they're due a win. And it's good to see them all battling for each other and working hard. And you know,
Paul Hart's face was brilliant at the end.
Yeah,
he's aged about 15 years, yeah. 6 months
in that second half.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But they've got a bit of a run in there now, haven't they? They've got some decent games.
Spurs at home, but apart from that, we've got a load of winnable games. Yeah, I'll tell you what, that'll be good. That'll be interesting to see Redknapp go back to Fratton Park, especially in light of what's just happened as well. Yeah.
Well, it's a load of nonsense thinking I'm going to leave.
Gambling, what are you talking about? It's a mug's game.
Bang? What's a bang? I've never even heard of a bang.
No, you're all rubbish.
My Sandra, that's all he ever says. My Sandra, we're going to go home and have a nice plate of pasta and a glass of wine with my Sandra.
The Portsmouth takeover, is it going to happen?
Well, it has happened, doesn't it?
Well, I don't know.
Again. Yeah, apparently he sold them on to someone else. Now I don't know what's going on.
Are they
going to
be taken over by Sanity for once? That'd be nice.
I could absolutely... That's one thing I can rule out. He's apparently been passed on to... The club's now been passed on to two Saudi Arabian brothers, apparently, billionaire investors. Just getting passed around everyone.
It's scary, isn't it? I mean, there's this whole situation a little while ago where Ken Bates come out and said, yeah, I don't actually know who owns Leeds. When you fill out a fit and proper person's test, do you not have to put your name on it? Or, like, any details of who you actually...
It'll remain anonymous to protect the innocent. Yeah, I mean, the same thing with Notts County, isn't it? They haven't really ousted who properly owns it. Yeah, not ousted.
Probably the right word.
That's a different one. It's strange. I mean, there's absolutely no dignity left.
No, they're really...
It's all gone. But
how can you function as a business where nobody knows who owns it?
Well, presumably the owners would take not a wage, but they'd know where the profits went, so the profits have got to go somewhere.
They make profits. Profit.
I think they're going back to Nigeria, aren't they? There was an email from them. I'd like to talk about the promoted sides into the Premiership. Burnley, in particular, doing fantastically well.
Their home form's
superb, isn't it? It's 100% so far, I think.
It is. Yeah, they haven't lost a home game in a long, long time. And they were 2-1 against Birmingham, but it flattered Birmingham, really. Birmingham had an awful lot of chances.
Yeah.
And they played excellently well. And Birmingham scored quite late on. It's a bit of a consolation. There's a great free kick from Sebastian Larsson. Yeah, absolutely no celebration, though.
No.
He just ran back to the
centre. I mean, fair enough, Wolves have just lost to Portsmouth. But I think they're doing all right, actually,
so Wolves have, I think, given a good account of themselves. They really, really battered Fulham the other weekend.
Mm.
Really, really did.
Yeah, I think that they also had a good last 10 or 15 minutes against Portsmouth, but just couldn't score. Yeah. David James made a good save, got it towards the end, as he does.
As he does.
Yeah, he's still... I'll tell you, he also had a great game with Paul Robinson, even though he conceded six.
Mental. Well, I'm glad, actually, he's back in the England squad.
I wouldn't go that far. I'm not glad.
All right, well, who's your top three keepers, then?
Robert Green.
Yeah.
David James.
Yep.
And...
Buffon.
Yeah. Well. Manuel Almunia.
English.
Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying, but Robinson won't realistically start.
No, but he's number three at the moment. Mm. I mean, they said Foster's not got in because of chest injury or something. I think it's probably because of the mistakes he's been making.
He's not been playing that well, has he? Yeah.
He's a good keeper. But at the moment, he shouldn't be in that squad and isn't.
Yeah. I'll tell you who should be in it and isn't. Darren Bent.
Yep.
Yeah. Agreed.
Banging him in, isn't he? Him and Kenwyn Jones seem to be getting along, don't they?
What's the reason for him not being in it, given that we've already qualified for the World Cup? Surely you want to see him do what he can do. Give him a full game up front.
Yeah, especially with Defoe out. It's just similar sort of players.
Yeah.
You'd rather him than Agbon Lahore.
I'd say so, yeah. I mean, you could make an argument for him to be in the squad over pretty much, I mean, apart from Rooney, any of them.
Carlton Cole, I'd take him out.
Yeah.
Carlton Cole scored at the weekend, but he's not, I don't think he's international.
Well, when you got Heskey in, Colton Cole's doing a similar thing, but far less effectively. So
Capello loves Heskey, doesn't he? He said because some journalist in a press conference recently pulled him up on it because he said Capello famously said, "Oh, my players who come into my squad need to play games," and they said, "Well, what about Heskey? He's not starting games." And Capello sort of gave a little cheeky grin and went, "Well, you know." He sort of basically said, without saying it, "I make up the rules around here. Don't question me. If I'm putting Heskey, I'm putting him in."
Well. West Ham are struggling, though, at the moment.
They are. They seem to be very, very inconsistent, don't they, in terms of they'll have a good season, look like they're going to kick on, and then struggle a bit.
I thought they were really going to kick on this season. Lucky to get a point against Fulham.
They were, They've not won at home all season.
I mean, they were 1-0 up with Fulham just having lost a man, and they threw the lead away. I mean, they were very lucky right at the end that Eddie Johnson wasn't a bit more composed. They could have lost it right at the
end. That was outrageous, wasn't it? Speaking of Robert Green, what's he doing there?
Yeah. Well,
That was like reminiscent of me in the old round ball 11 aside.
Don't put yourself down. Coming out. The listeners and I will do that.
That Diamante looks interesting. He's quality. He looks like a nutcase. He's West Ham are good for signing mental players like that.
Do you know what he said when he first came to the club? Oh, I'm not the new Di Canio. Yeah. That's what he said.
But he has got that sort of fiery look about him, hasn't he? And he does look like he's a sort of a player of quality. I'm
he does play like that, too. Yeah.
And that guy, Zavon Hines, looks a good player as well.
They've got some good young players coming through, but they haven't won a home game all season. They are really struggling. I mean, if Pompey weren't so rubbish, they'd be bottom.
Well, it's true. We touched on Fulham briefly. We went to see them.
Oh, yeah.
We did, yeah.
Against FC Basel.
A lot of fun.
Good game.
Great fans, Basel.
Yeah.
Terrible fans, Fulham.
Well,
the
best moment was FC Basel fans were singing and dancing, as you would expect in the way support from Europe, all game.
One particularly attractive fan.
There
was a man, he was topless.
Yeah.
He looked like Che Guevara with a kind of Che Guevara hat. Very muscular.
Thinking about it, it could have been Roger Federer, because he's their most famous fan.
No, he wasn't tall enough.
No, okay, fair enough.
And he'd have looked like Roger Federer.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. No, he's from a distance, you couldn't really make out his way.
Oh, you could.
But I tried to chuck him a tennis ball, but he missed it, so definitely couldn't win it.
Yeah.
And FC Basel fans were singing all game, and then when Fulham scored, all the Fulham fans started singing, and the FC Basel fans, with a perfect rendition of English, just started singing, "Sing when you're winning," and then just went back to singing in French or German, whatever it was again. It was cracking.
Yeah, no, it was a good win for Fulham, though. £7!
Yeah.
Great.
Not too bad, not too shoddy.
£7 a ticket. Yeah.
God knows what the ground would have looked like if it wasn't really, really cheap.
Yeah.
Because there was big swathes of empty bits.
We were near the fifth.
The new fifth official.
Oh yeah, they didn't do it. There was an outrageous penalty decision in the first half, and that fifth official was standing right there. He didn't do anything.
He pissed me off. That fifth did.
and he was wearing shorts as well, which you couldn't figure out why he was wearing shorts, because it's not as if he's got to run around. He just stands around
doing absolutely nothing.
I can't remember who was saying was like, oh, you know, in the away matches in Russia, he can't wear shorts and stand still the whole game.
No.
He'll freeze.
It's a good point. Who was saying that then?
Could have been Matt Ryan.
Good point, yeah. Good point, well made, actually.
I wasn't happy. He didn't do a thing to earn his money that night.
You weren't allowed to drink boozles, I know that.
No.
Never mind Basel's. The boozles were notable by their absence.
Isn't that a UEFA rule, though? That's not a full rule.
You're not allowed to drink boozles.
Yeah, it's
yeah. I take it in Pete's rather strange vernacular, he means beer. Because they had beer, they had bars there, but I don't think it was...
I think it's a UEFA thing.
Is it? Okay, just for the Champions League as well.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
The next England match will be showing on the internet.
The internet, Marcus.
That's right, yeah.
Them internets.
Somebody talk about that.
Pete. But you watch football on the internet.
I do watch football on the internet, mostly illegally. Hello. Hello, everyone.
That's the thing I can't understand, because...
Why are they nude?
Apparently this company needs to get 300,000 subscribers to break even. It's never going to happen.
No.
Never going to happen.
So is this... So it is paid for?
Yeah.
Because there's links... I thought it was, like, through newspapers
and signed. An internet company have bought premium TV, isn't it?
The Times and a few other newspaper websites are showing it as well.
Oh, okay, right.
I don't know how it works. Okay. It's a weird one, isn't it? It's all come about because Satanta doesn't exist anymore, basically.
You're blaming Satanta.
You shouldn't have to pay.
Stamp on their grave, James.
Yeah,
I will.
You shouldn't have to be able to pay to watch an England game.
Why hasn't the BBC stumped it up? Stumped up the cash? Were they just asking too much? Is that the bottom line?
Manish's wage is high.
I mean, they've got to pay Capello's wages. Yeah, that's why.
But when you look at the circumstances of the game as well, we're already qualified. It's going to... less interest than there's ever going to be for a game other than a friendly. I mean, even the next friendly is Brazil-England, so that's going to be... That's genuinely going
to
be more...
Yeah, but I mean, there's a big uproar about it, but I think people have been a little bit naive to think that this isn't how a lot of people are going to be watching football in the near future, to be honest. I mean, I do watch a lot of football, usually on Chinese sort of relay systems and stuff. Yeah. Even the pubs around Arsenal, you'll get to... almost the weirdest thing, watching in a pub a match that has been broadcast off the internet.
Yeah, I
mean... bounced off a satellite in, like, Turkey or something and then back again.
I mean, Al Jazeera show the Premiership, don't they? A lot of dodgy pubs have that hooked.
But I think that's the way forward. I think people are going, internet, I'm not watching it on my computer, I can't throw booze around and stuff. It's like, well, no, I mean, that's how a lot of people will be watching football.
Take your computer next question to the pub.
Well, I think what will inevitably happen is that sort of TVs will have decent internet access on them, and it will just be the same.
Well, my next question was going to be access. Do you think the laptop will be the new television?
Well, I don't know, either that or the media extender, I suppose you'd call it, one of those things that boxes that sit atop your Sky box that kind of relays internets from your laptop and videos and stuff like that. Well, we're gonna, television.
I think we're going to have to just wait and see what happens there.
I don't want to. I want the future now, Marcus. I want to enjoy
it. Your problem. You want the mirror on the stick.
No, they promised us rocket packs.
I want my Jetsons car and I want it now.
Yeah. Well, a man who got what he wanted was Kevin Keegan.
Yeah, he could buy a Jetsons car.
Well,
that.
I don't know. Has he got what he wanted, though? Because by the looks of it, what he wanted was to ruin Newcastle.
He wanted 25 million, didn't he? And he got 2 million.
Yeah. But apparently that might not even cover his costs.
The thing that came out of that which interested me the most was Dennis Wise's appalling conduct. Yeah. he signed South American players.
What I love is when he said Dennis Wise said, well, I gave him some clips on YouTube.
No, he didn't even give them to him. He was like, go and look him up on YouTube.
Kevin Keegan doesn't know what YouTube is. That's a really interesting sort of thing. If you type in Ignacio Gonzalez, which is the player in question, on YouTube, there's 3 video clips of him, right? One of which is a YouTube channel with several different South American footballers on. Right. And they're all imagine the grainiest footage you could ever find.
Yeah.
They don't score goals. It's just them like doing a little bit of a flick or something.
I bet it's Dennis Wise in like a disguise with a moustache, just running around with the ball, putting massive tackles.
Yeah, but yeah. I think it was, I think it might have been when Saturday Comes, like about 15 years ago, they dressed up a couple of journalists as and had them like doing volleys and stuff in a car park or something. Yeah. And they filmed them. Because you know they used to buy them off videotape and notable Barry Fry, I think, bought a couple off VHS, which is just ridiculous. Yeah. And they try to sell them around. They try to like pimp them out outside
outside the ground, with the back of like car boots.
But I mean, it's the next generation of that, really, isn't it? It's like, look at this grainy footage on YouTube of some naff footballers. But it beggars belief. And it was all about giving the agent a bit of mad props so that we have the pick.
First
refusal on some South American players. Absolutely.
Which never happened.
Blabbering crap
it's
from
Wise. It's disgraceful that could ever be a factor.
And Wise sort of, weirdly, he speaks very, very pleasantly about Mike Ashley, despite the fact he got fired. You know what I mean? Yeah. Mike Ashley terminated his contract.
But Mike Ashley
was
given loads of money for effectively nothing for like 2 years.
But and also, like, and he also mentioned that the administration, he mentioned that, if Keegan had got more than 2 million, we would have gone into administration. Utter crap. I think it's another desperate attempt for Newcastle United to try and demonise Kevin Keegan. Mm. And at the end of the day, Kevin Keegan, it was proved in a court of law that he was not bound by the terms of his contract, that he would have last word on player arrivals.
Mm. Really got a feel for Keegan in this, because he really has been sort of demonised in a way, and it's such a sort of sad.
He strikes as a good bloke.
Yeah,
he's probably quite a good bloke, I think.
Yeah, I mean, just the fact, obviously, he was such a legend at Newcastle from playing there and from managing there the first time. For this to come and taint his legacy like that is a real shame. Well, this whole stigma damages that he's after as well. He's got a point. He's going to find it hard to get a job.
The man started his own football circus.
Yeah, and he
gave his own stigma.
He did also say that, you know, I haven't watched the game in 2 years before he took over at Newcastle.
He wants to get back into management, but it's going to be very difficult for him.
I mean, you're right. Pompey will have him.
Well,
but I'm not sure who else. Like I just said, I think Keegan's probably a good bloke, you know. And in a way, I do think that the game's moved on since he managed reasonably successfully. But there's no reason to say he couldn't sort of step up and really give it another go. I mean, it was a shame it didn't work out in Newcastle, but I think we all knew it wouldn't. I don't think we all knew it had come to this, but I just thought he's setting himself up for a massive 4 year. I'm personally not a big fan of going. I don't think he should go back. I think he should just stay as it is.
Do you think Roy Keane's going to go? Because he didn't answer the reporter's question.
Who's got the brass balls to fire Roy Keane?
Did you see that?
A board of people, I would imagine.
In case anybody didn't see it, the reporter said... are you going to stay? Are you going to stay on as Ipswich manager? Are you thinking of leaving? Keane just gave him daggers and went, I'm not going to dignify that with an answer or something.
He cut him in half with that look.
Reasonable response, though. It's very, very early in. You know Roy Keane's not just going to walk out, is he? He's not that sort of bloke. We all know that about him by now. And for some reason, whenever you talk about Roy Keane, you have to mention his manliness.
Yeah, he did walk away from Sunderland.
Yeah, but
I was going to say, James.
But he was there for a long time. That's what true. I'm saying. He's not going to just jack it in straight away.
I think if somebody tried to fire him, I think he'd probably turn into like a human torch. He'd just, there'd be a smell in the room. There'd be a pressure in the room, and like the oxygen would get. So what's going on? Oh my God, he's self-immolating.
Do you know that? I'd like him to do what's known as a Lasana Diabat, which basically Pompey had this player when they got promoted called Lasana Diabat, and he's this defensive midfielder, African chap, and he got his contract terminated, and he just kept turning up. for training, and after a while, he just let him train with him, but he wasn't playing. He refused to accept it like a jilted lover. He just kept going back and turning, and he'd be there at the beginning of the training with his boots and get him on and carry on training. So maybe Roy Keane would do that. You can't sack me, I'm still turning up. Like Gascoigne at Kettering, when he got sacked, he goes, he can't sack me, I'm Paul Gascoigne. Well, he has sacked me, but I'm still turning up. That's what Gascoigne said. Maybe Roy Keane will do that. That'd be brilliant.
Actually, did you see that one of the stewards at the weekend? I forget which game it was, but he was wearing boots.
Oh yeah, I saw that. Yeah. Nice pair as well. Like a really flashy pair of boots.
That's optimism, isn't it?
He was expecting. Hey, you.
Yeah, we're a man short and we need a striker. It's the last minute.
That happened to West Ham, didn't it? A pre-season friendly years and years ago. There was this bloke basically heckling them,
like that was
Ronnie and Reggie would have been in. Yeah, they'd be turning in their graves in this performance. And he actually chucked him on.
Redknapp was in charge.
Yeah, he scored. He was offside. But
yeah, I think we mentioned it before, but I always wondered.
Would it be libelous to accept the Redknapp except for the bung for that? I'm not suggesting he did. I just found
all bung, so why not?
Have you got an agent? Oh yeah, send him over. I'll give you 10 minutes.
The Premier League may appeal for Sol Campbell so he can join a club before the transfer window.
What has Sol Campbell ever done for the Premiership? That's what
he's put in hard graft for a number of years.
Does the club actually want him or not?
Well, Villa are linked with him quite strongly, apparently. Yeah, I think that would be a sensible move.
I think Phil Brown, he'll get in there.
I think he can aim a bit higher than that, to be honest.
He ain't got the legs. He ain't got them. I don't know where they are.
As a man who's watched Sol Campbell play reasonably regularly, I don't think he's that good anymore.
How dare
you? I don't think personally. Do you think it'd be a good sign for Villa, do you?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously he's not going to be like a sort of first choice, I would imagine.
I think it's a good plan to have there. I think Villa's too high. I think Hull City, maybe.
If I was a Villa fan and they started a game with Sol Campbell and Richard Dunn at the back against any player that can run sort of faster than a snail, I'd have a heart attack.
You say this, but recently there was a sort of a sprint test, wasn't there? And Sol Campbell actually came second in the Premiership behind Theo Walcott.
Can I choose not to accept it? I've heard it.
Was it running through walls?
He's right, but I'm choosing not to accept it.
Lahore or Aaron Lennon?
Apparently. I just read this on the internet, which is notoriously reliable.
Yeah. Well, I can't argue against such a thing. D-Beck is looking like he'll have to come in and save the day at Milan. He reckons he's close to a move back there because Milan are having a dreadful start. Well, they have had a dreadful start.
Leonardo's under pressure. To be fair, they bombarded FC Zurich in the Champions League. They still lost. They deserve to probably get something out of that.
They should have won that game, but they lost. You know, I think that's Zurich's first win.
Is it in the Champions League?
I think so. I don't think they've been in it many times. It could even be the first time they're in it. Someone can email in and correct me, I'm sure. But
obviously, I mean, Ronaldinho, there was talk that he was going to retire recently. He rejected it.
He scored on the weekend. They got a 1-1 draw. But it's not happening for Milan at the moment.
I think one of the strangest decisions Milan made was obviously they knew they were going to let Kaká go because they needed the money. They had already the perfect replacement on their books, but on loan, in Yohan Gourcuff. Yeah. I know he wanted to go to Bordeaux, but they could have... I don't know, I think they should have tried harder to keep him. He's a fantastic player.
Well, do you know who else is not really performing for them who's a great player? Is Pato.
Yeah. Well, Pato arrived with a lot of hype, didn't he?
He's played well for them. But Ancelotti said before he left, he said that his attitude was wrong. He's kind of the fame and the adulation and all's gone to his head a bit. And he's not getting in the Brazil side.
No, I think when Kaká left, I think everyone was looking for Pato to step into those boots, and maybe he's just not really ready yet.
Well, Tim Vickery in his blog was saying that he reckons that he's been left out by Dunga because Fabiano's scoring goals for fun, Nilmar scored a hat trick, and Adriano's kind of playing well too. And I think Pato's been kind of left out to give him a kick up the arse, as if to say the World Cup's coming soon. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
get involved.
You want to be in that squad. Yeah
exactly. Because he's such a talent. Really is. So it's a shame. Milan, they've had a dreadful start to the season. Real Madrid have had a great start to the season, but they've just been halted slightly by Sevilla.
That was an absolutely superb game. Is it?
They were without Ronaldo and Diarra.
Yeah.
But still, they've got enough in there, I think.
Sevilla, I mean, I'll tell you something. Real Madrid had a chance really late on. Sergio Ramos, who obviously was a player for Sevilla.
He got a bit of pelt, didn't
he? And he missed it. And I'll tell you what, if they got out of that game with a 2-2 draw, that would have been an absolute disgrace. Because Casillas made one of the best saves I've ever seen. And he made another world-class save as well. Mm. And who's the fella? Jesus Navas.
Apparently.
He absolutely ripped Real Madrid's young... What's the young fullback? Is it Marcelo? Yeah, he ripped him to pieces over and over again. And he scored a header when he's only about 5'7". Yeah. And I don't think Jesus Navas can actually leave the ground without getting homesick. So it's a big achievement in itself.
Sevilla are a really, really interesting side because every season... Their big players get taken away from them. I mean, Keita went to Barcelona. There's Sergio Ramos. There's
Luis Fabiano wanted to leave, but they've managed to hold on to him.
I mean, even as far back as sort of Julio Baptista and Jose Reyes, their players, they regularly come to prominence and they move on the next season. But they bring others in. They buy sensibly. They bring people through their academy. They're great.
It's what Valencia kind of did before.
Luis Fabiano not left because he wouldn't go anywhere in Northern Europe. He wants to stay somewhere warm.
He wanted to go to Milan. I think.
It was either Milan was the only one he was going to accept other than sort of Barca or Real, but.
They're a good club, Sevilla. I mean, they're very much involved in the community. A friend of mine lives in southern Spain. He supports Sevilla, and he's always going on about them and saying that they offer cheap tickets often to people, and one thing and another. Although I heard in that game actually that the cheapest ticket was well over
110 euros, wasn't it?
Something like that. It's a bit of a shame to hear, really. But
I read a piece about the 110 euro ticket, and in the same article, I forget who wrote it now. I read that Barcelona have got 93,000 season ticket holders.
It's incredible, isn't it?
I mean, I think for those reasons, pretty much those obvious reasons, Barca and Real are going to be fighting it out for the title, obviously. But if any of them slip up and start having a bit of a mare, I think Sevilla could do something.
Well, Sevilla are the ones that I think they've taken over from where Valencia used to be.
In
that kind of big three, if you like, in Spain.
Valencia have done very well to hang on to their players. It looked like they were going
to. They have done.
You never know; they might even make.
Well, it's a shame because I mean, we all remember that Valencia side had got to two Champions League finals.
What, with Mendieta and those sort of players?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They're a superb side. So I'd love to see Sevilla do something in La Liga and even in the Champions League as well, because they're a good club.
They're a nice team to watch,
and
also,
they have a wonderful thing outside on the wall of their stadium—a big sort of mosaic thing.
Yeah.
Which has got lots of flags and all from teams all over the world that they've played.
Nice.
Google it.
Nice touch.
It is beautiful. I've been there. Lovely.
It's worth mentioning, actually, how well Real Madrid have started, aside from that result. Because Ronaldo, he's almost in double figures already, isn't he?
He's had a fantastic
Sunday. It's incredible. He just slotted straight
in. Isn't it the best start, goal-scoring-wise, I think they've ever had?
He got injured midweek in the Champions League, didn't he, Ronaldo? And they've won 6 or 7 games on the spin before
that. Him and Ibrahimovic for Barcelona and Ronaldo for Real Madrid have had the best starts to those club seasons, I think, goal-scoring-wise.
Have they?
Yeah. Ibrahimovic scored in his first 5 in a row, didn't he? I don't know if he got the 6th as well, because that game happened.
I was surprised a little bit earlier, Marcus, that you said that Diarra didn't start. When did we think that was going to be a sentence in the future?
Well,
Diarra is Pompey isn't it?
In South America, Boca Juniors played. Yep, that's right. Boca Juniors played Vélez Sarsfield. And it is worth having a look at this because Riquelme scored a beauty.
Off the crossbar, top corner.
Yeah, lovely stuff. Martin Palermo, you emailed me this, Luke, and I kind of thought, no, he's got that wrong. Scored a 35 stroke. I think it was actually a 40-yard header.
It's the biggest, it's the furthest that header I've ever seen.
It was outrageous.
And he meant it as well. It's not as if it bounced off his head, but it was...
So what happened, the keeper came out and cleared it, but sort of slightly fluffed the clearance, it went head high, and it came straight to Palermo, who thought on his feet...
Who just... And thundered the thing.
And with the experience of a man who's once missed 3 penalties in one game, he bullet headed it straight back over the keeper's head. If anyone has seen
but
a header,
it bent in the
air.
It did. It's outrageous.
We'll put this on our blog, on the website. Yeah, yeah. It's so worth watching. It's mental. I mean, Riquelme scored an absolute peach in that game as well, didn't it?
I swear, balls are lighter in South America or something to do with the
heads are harder.
reality is weirder.
Maybe the ball's one of those like weighted balls.
Waiting
it. You don't know where it's
going
to go.
Yeah.
Emails.
Oh,
hang on a minute.
Oh, sorry.
Emails.
Right.
Better.
Not sorry at all. James, you go first.
Go on then. Right. This is from Simon Curran. Right. Hey Ramblers, I used to love 606 and think of it as my favourite podcast to download, but now I love this podcast, it's miles better. Thank you, Simon. My friends and I had a bet on how many weeks in a row Alan Green would say the word quote during the programme. My friend is winning with 8 and counting. I think you're winning as well. Surely that's how that bet would work. So don't put yourself down too much, Simon. You're still going to win this. But he goes on to say, this is not what I'm writing about. Oh. At school, we're having a fun day soon, and my friends and I have set up a competition for the best Ramble Force Ho! Sign. The winner gets £100 out of our pocket money, and we will also send a picture of it to you Ramblers. Thank you for that. Not only that, it costs £2 to enter, and all the money will go to the Cancer Research Organisation. Thanks, guys. Tell me what you think. Well, we think that is wonderful, Simon. Yeah. Well done.
And we want a bit of commission on that.
That's touched my heart.
Thank you. Get it filmed.
Yeah.
I'm not encouraging children to film. let's make that clear. Let's make that clear. But
no, that's great stuff. I've got an email here. It says, Ramblefools, ho!
Ho!
Congratulations on your debut win the other Saturday, which was, of course, our 11-a-side.
Oh, yeah.
Cheers. It says, I'm in the process of moving from 5-a-side to 11-a-side. And play as keeper. And I was wondering if Lukey had any tips on how to be a successful goalkeeper.
A successful one, absolutely not.
Right, but just make sure that you're never knowingly lobbed.
Yeah, I'm never... what's his name, sorry, Marcus?
It's Matt from Leeds. He says, I thought of emailing someone on Sky Sports, not Andy Burton, as I'm looking for useful advice, but none of them are interested.
I am interested, Matt, and thanks very much for your email. As a man who's never knowingly being lobbed... I would suggest that you just organise your defence and do your best.
Well done, he's 28.
Game, set, match, more.
Old Lev Yashin over there.
You can also email Jeff Winter, because he'll definitely get back to you.
Yeah, it might be the right answer.
Make yourself big, cover your angles, that's all you need.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. I try to cover my angles. The hardest part about being a keeper when you're not a keeper, Matt, is knowing where the goal is. You have to keep, without looking over your shoulder every 5 seconds.
That's true. Yeah. Even in 5-a-side, that's true.
Get two good centre-backs, Matt. That's what
I would say. I would probably venture that if it's got to the stage where he's asking me for goalkeeper advice, he's probably at rock bottom and shouldn't bother.
But you're an inspiration to young keepers
there. Thank you very much, Marcus. Very much, okay.
No, it wasn't... You know, I just think that's probably the case.
Luke got the advice, make yourself big, quite early on. Now he ate a lot, so that was his...
Below the belt and completely
Booyah!
Unnecessary.
Over the belt as well. It's all completely unnecessary.
Pete's got an email and he's going to read it out.
This is from Jude Pearson. She says, Dear Ramblers...
Hey, Jude.
Oh, good.
Oh,
so
good,
done there,
good.
Yeah.
Thanks, Beatles.
Thanks, Beatles. My name's Pete Earls, so... Your story of being told to fuck off by Jensen by... Who? Was it Jensen?
John Jensen.
By Jensen when getting Arsenal autographs outside a hotel reminded me of a time when Arsenal came to Leicester to play the Mighty Foxes in one of the cup competitions. It was one of the first, or possibly the first game Ian Wright played for Arsenal. I was about 10 or 11 years old, and after games against notable opposition, my mum and I used to wait outside for the players to come out to get their bus. The Arsenal players came out and all signed my Arsenal poster, probably taken from Shoot magazine or something. Ian Wright even chatted to me for a little while and joked about me cutting him out of a Palace poster and sticking him onto the Arsenal poster.
That's one righty.
I was getting a lot of autographs, but one important player's signature was missing. Michael Thomas was a hero for me for scoring that goal against Liverpool. Most of my schoolmates were Liverpool fans, so it was always good to see them fail. I approached Michael Thomas, who was stood with someone, possibly Jensen, and said, excuse me, holding out my poster and pen. He looked at me, then the poster, and said, why don't you fuck off?
Did Arsenal in the 90s have a competition to see who could tell the most kids to fuck off?
What a tosspot. Luckily, my mum didn't hear, or it would have been another football career brought to an abrupt, premature end.
What, another? What do you mean? Is his mother going around knocking footballers about?
I think that's the point.
Remember Blomqvist? He was rude to me.
Yeah. Cheers, Ramblers, Jude.
Oh, thank you for that. Cheers, Jude. I'm sorry to hear that.
Fuck off, Jude. I'm a pro. What can I say?
We'll act like one.
So, Spelzy, who do we think is going to get our Championship Manager goodie bag?
Go on, Spelzy, Sam!
Tell us who's going to get something in the post.
Ooh, it's got to be Simon Curran.
Oh. Yes.
The man doing the thing for
fighting cancer.
Well done, the banners, the cancer research, championship manager goodie bag.
They're all words. cancer, give me the bag.
Funny stories!
Thank you, Spelzy.
You've got a funny story.
I have.
Well, read the beggar out then.
Thank you, Marcus. This is about Raymond Domenech, who I think we can all agree is always good value. if not for his personality, then for his team's inept performances. France coach Raymond Domenech has an admirer from an unlikely quarter. Catherine Ringer, former porn star and lead singer of classic 80s band Les Rita Mitsoko, has just released, free to download on her website, a track entitled Je Kiffe Raymond, or I Love Raymond, in the slang of the era. Oh, yeah. It features lyrics that translate as follows. I love Raymond, what a looker. Yeah, his style, his name. He's the tops, this Domenech. I love his image, his clinginess. And then an untranslatable pun on the word crampon, meaning both football boots and leech. At his command, I leap into action. Go on, Raymond, you're so handsome. You're good. I imagine just one golden match and everyone will adore you. A good pass and long live your colours. Yeah, you're good. You're classy. I love your image. His bearing of an old stud and magnificent.
We're still recording.
I don't know what's going on here. He doesn't give a damn what people think. I'm flattered and embarrassed.
Not one mention of Paul O'Grady.
What did Domenech say about this, Marcus? He said, I'm flattered and embarrassed.
I like the line, his bearing of an old stud. What?
You could just email that to the Nuge, Luke. Change a couple of words.
I will do. I'll change it around. I'll send it over there.
Do you reckon the Nuge?
Do you reckon David Nugent would say, I'm flattered and embarrassed?
I don't know about flattered.
I like how she's on her website. She's giving that away for free. There's probably a lot of things on the website she's not giving away for free.
Yeah, I expect so. David Nugent would say, if I sent that to David Nugent, he'd say, I'm fully erect and embarrassed.
Apparently this woman's 51 years old, so she's... weird.
Yeah, but Domenech is old, aren't you?
Yeah, that's kind of a behaviour of a 30-year-old.
I'm just trying to paint a picture for you.
Oh, Mum! Is it not enough that you're an ex-porn star? You got to write love songs to bloody Domenech.
Let's move on swiftly. Pete, would you like to go next?
All right, then. This is about Cork City, and sent in from a gentleman listener called Paul Farrell. Or Farrell. The chairman of Cork City recently claimed an unfortunate blip led to an embarrassing incident which left Dublin-bound players stranded for nearly 2 hours after a bus company owed over €2,000 by the club refused to take them to a League of Ireland Premier Division clash with St Pat's. The City players assembled at Silver Springs Moran Hotel for an 11:45 departure, but the bus driver refused to let them on until the company, Kearney's, were paid more than €2,000 owed by the club for previous trips. Team captain Dan Murray was forced to phone Cork's radio station 96FM, where he made an on-air appeal for help. And after sympathetic donors turned up, Cork City chairman Tom Coughlin agreed to settle the outstanding bill with the company, which I imagine was very good.
Why did the bus driver turn up if we weren't going to drive? I'm here, but I'm not driving you anywhere. It seems pointless.
Coughlin said it's embarrassing and not a great preparation for a team trying to get into Europe. London-born left-back Danny Murphy said, all of us are very embarrassed to be standing here like beggars, begging people to pay for our bus journey. It's gone beyond a joke now. We're being made to look like a laughing stock in the league. And on the nation's roads.
There's so much embarrassment in this funny story section.
Yeah. It really is. It's awful.
But James is going to pick it up.
Oh, I've got another one. This is unbelievable. Right, Real Madrid have received a distressing letter that could spell disaster for the upcoming season. Ooh. Superstar signing Cristiano Ronaldo has been cursed by a wizard.
Oh, bloody hell.
According to the Spanish paper El Mundo, the wizard claims someone personally acquainted with Ronaldo paid for a spell that would injure him. Because the wizard is a mixture of priest and doctor, he must safeguard his client's identity. The wizard previously threatened Real Madrid players in 2003 and 2006. The club suffered disastrous spells during both seasons, but rebounded to win the league in 06-07. He can't promise that it will be a serious injury, and it depends on various factors, so that it will be achieved sooner or later. Real Madrid are unconcerned. So weirdly, he did actually get injured before the game at Sevilla, which is when he predicted this would happen, and they did lose. So, Marcus, as a Christian man, maybe you're one to comment on whether magic is real or not?
Bollocks.
It's very, very strange. You know, I mean, as a mixture of priest and doctor. Well, you're not. You're not a doctor.
You're really not.
You're
a
wizard. Doctor Wizard.
Priest.
Oh, hello, Doctor Wizard.
How do you... God. Do you just do... Like, do you do, like, a split degree in priesthood and medicine?
Wizardry.
Which just adds up to being a wizard.
I thought a wizard was actually known as a warlock.
Yeah. No, that's a witch. That's a male witch.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
What's the difference?
Hats. Different hats.
Can we move on? Can we move on here? Different hats.
But the trouser wear is the same.
The trouser wear is the same.
Everything else is the same. Beard length.
Beard? Yeah, pull up beard. Just get into beards.
Well, what's yours? What would you class yours as?
Rubbish.
The pixie's beard.
No!
Hello there!
That's a leprechaun for one.
That is. I'm sorry.
It might be an Irish pixie. You don't need to discriminate, do you?
Things have taken a turn from the worst.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's profile time. Oh, let's just go straight in. Franz Anton Beckenbauer.
Ooh. He would have gone straight in.
The Kaiser.
Yeah, the Kaiser, yeah, good.
Now, we've done many a profile, but this really is classic stuff, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you. He was born on the 11th of September 1945. Work it out.
22 years before the Summer of Love.
Thank you. Don't sound so strange.
You won't...
But a year after the Summer of Hate.
You just wanted to use that jingle.
I did.
Just wanted to use that sound effect.
People keep on adding them into the little box, and I keep on going, how can I use this one?
You obviously, everyone thinks Pete's just some sort of maestro producer, but he carries around this utility belt with loads of different sounds on it. He does this all day in real life.
Franz Beckenbauer, gentlemen.
Oh?
Must tweet.
Franz Beckenbauer. Without a doubt, one of the greatest players and possibly coaches of all time.
Mm-hmm.
We're not messing around today.
I agree with that.
We're not. Thank you.
Yeah,
I'll carry on.
Gets my endorsement.
Some people might say he invented. I think perhaps maybe redefined the role of the sweeper, and he was probably. You'd go as far to say the best sweeper of all time, I think, in that position.
Yeah. He really does define that position, doesn't he?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it was kind of an attacking defensive player, I suppose, in a kind of a weird
way.
He was. Very elegant on the ball, very confident, tactically superb, great leader. And this all gave him the nickname...
The Kaiser.
The Kaiser.
Can we call him a libero?
Yeah,
That's the Italian.
Yeah, but it's a similar. Yeah, the position.
That's libero. What the Italians call sweeper, isn't it?
There's a bit more to it than a sweeper.
Libero. Yeah, sure.
That's what I'm saying.
But a very versatile player. He started out as a midfielder, but obviously got his name as it being the great defender he was. His career started at the age of 9 when he played for the youth team of FC München 06, and he joined Bayern Munich aged 14. 3 years later, he gave up his job as a trainee insurance salesman to become a professional footballer.
It was a good decision.
I think we're all happy.
With the benefit of hindsight, that was the right choice. But who's to say he wouldn't have been a great insurance salesman? He probably would have been.
He'd have probably redefined his role in that as well.
Yeah. He'd redefined the shape of insurance salesman for years to come.
One can only assume. He made his debut for Bayern on the left wing, or as an outside left, against FC St Pauli.
We
know then, they're already in the team. Yeah.
That's right, in 1964. And in his first season in the regional league, he helped Bayern win or achieve promotion to the Bundesliga. Because Bayern weren't a particularly fashionable side at the time. They were in the lower league, not in the prestigious Bundesliga. But within a year of them going up, he made his debut for West Germany, aged 20. Now, things just moved on rapidly for Beckenbauer. He played... I mean, that was 1964 he made his debut. 1966, he was playing in a World Cup final.
He don't muck around.
No, that's what we're talking about.
He's redefining time.
He certainly is, Pete, and that's why we love him. One of the reasons, anyway. His first appearance at a World Cup was a 5-0 victory over Switzerland, and he scored 2 goals.
That's not bad, is it?
Bear in mind he's a sweeper.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Or he was more of a defender then. He used to get forward a bit. And in the final, he was given the job to man mark Bobby Charlton. Bearing in mind he's 20, 21 years old.
Mm-hmm. I didn't win, though, did they, eh? We bloody did.
Right, bloody. From our lines...
Yeah.
You're right there, Jack. Having a good time. But he said that He said that Charlton was the player that the Germans feared the most, and Beckenbauer said himself, England beat us in 1966 because Bobby Charlton was just that little bit better than me.
But he won
FIFA Young Player of the Tournament at the age of 21, it was, and he played a huge part in Germany finishing second at that World Cup, and he was third joint top goal scorer at that World Cup. What an impact on the world stage that man had.
It's not bad.
Not bad that World Cup, was it?
Yeah, not bad that France.
Not bad this sport.
Bayern soon became a force in the Bundesliga, which was kind of a new setup to the German league at that time. And they won the German Cup in 66 and 67. And they won the Cup Winners' Cup in 1967.
Oh, good.
Yeah, very good. He became team captain of Bayern in 68-69. And led the club to their first league title. And this was when he really started to delve into the sweeper role, or the libero role, as Luke quite rightly pointed out earlier in the profile. And it was the attacking sweeper game. It sounds almost like a contradiction, really.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what it was. And he experimented a bit. And he would sort of mount attacks from the centre of defence. And he'd often watched... he admired very much Giancinto... Facchetti, who was the Internazionale and Italy left back, who again kind of kickstarted the whole wing back kind of thing that the Italian did, and he wanted to adopt a similar kind of role at centre back. And in soccer, the world game, it reads, the role of sweeper appeared a perfect launching pad, since the sweeper himself was never marked, lurked deep at the back, and could pick his moment to surge upfield.
Sort of like a quarterback role, really.
Well, yeah, kind of really. Unfortunately, he wasn't given this freedom to play for the national side, but that time would come, Pete, don't you worry.
Just a weird role, isn't it? Like a defender with free rein.
Yes.
It's really odd.
Well, it's Sol Campbell, you still love it. I mentioned it as much as I can.
Tommy Vermaelen loves it as well.
Yeah. There you go.
True, Philippe Albert loved it.
But it is a valid point, Pete. Yeah. You know, and we like valid points. So he was, as I say, he was captain of Bayern, and... towards the end of the 60s and into the 70s, Bayern really started to become a real big force in Europe. And another couple of outstanding players I had was Sepp Maier and Gerd Müller.
Müller, of course.
Now, World Cup Mexico, 1970. He got his revenge against England in the quarterfinals when they won 3-2 and he got one himself. But perhaps the most memorable of his displays was in the semi-final against Italy when he dislocated his shoulder. But he carried on. I think they'd already used their substitutes. He carried on with his injured arm in a sling. And it went the whole extra time. And Italy won 4-3. And Germany got third place. They beat Uruguay in the
Beckham
third place.
Let him down there.
Well,
he lost 4-3.
Yeah, he only had a dislocated shoulder running around a pitch with his arm in a sling.
You'd never be allowed to do that nowadays.
No, exactly.
It's madness. But he has fond memories of Mexico. He said 1970 was a magnificent tournament. The fans were fanatical and the stadium... I love this. And stadium security wasn't quite so intense those days. You could pretty much do what you wanted to. There was just one armed policeman who sat outside the entrance and watched the whole ground. Very good mind. Some of these stadiums at the Aztec is 110,000.
Yeah.
Obviously, that would be unthinkable today. Back then, it was simply more relaxed. The games in Mexico were colourful. The country laughed and football danced.
That's nice.
So Germany finished third in that World Cup. So he's finished second and he's finished third. In 1971, he was made captain of Germany. And this was when he started to put his sweeper role right into the national team. He could really get stuck in there. And the following year at the European Championships, Beckenbauer took that sweeper role into international football, and Germany won the trophy, beating Soviet Union 3-0 in the final, and Beckenbauer was voted European Footballer of the Year that year. And under Beckenbauer's leadership, Bayern then won three successive Bundesliga titles and three successive European Cups.
Class.
Incredible.
He got a lot done, didn't he, Beckenbauer?
There's no arguing about that. They beat Atletico Madrid in the final 4-0. They beat Don Revy's Leeds 2-0. That was in 75, and they beat Saint-Étienne 1-0. And because they won the cup three times, they got to keep. You know, if you win a hat trick, you get to keep a trophy there. And they also won the World Clubs Cup in 76 over Cruzeiro of Brazil. But his biggest achievement, without a doubt, on his playing career was to captain his country to a World Cup victory in his home city of Munich in 1974. And of course, it was a memorable final against Holland and Johan Cruyff and co. And this meant that Beckenbauer is only one of two players in World Cup history. Wolfgang Overath, I think is how you pronounce that, is the other. He's got the complete collection of medals at World Cup, gold, silver and bronze.
Oh, good.
Ooh. How about that, eh?
Yeah.
And he became the first captain to lift the new FIFA World Cup trophy as Brazil got the Jules Rimet trophy that kind of finished in 1970.
Yeah, they got to keep that, didn't they?
Yeah. They did get to keep that. And he was also... that German side became the first national side to be European and world champions simultaneously, and France obviously accomplished that in 2000. He was then voted European Footballer of the Year for the second time in 1976. But in 1977, he accepted a $2.5 million contract to go and play for the New York Cosmos in the North American Soccer League.
Nazzle.
I love that.
And he was there for 4 years and won the Soccer Bowl three times. Right. Even winning things for the Cosmos.
He wins wherever he goes. He's a winner.
We talked about the Cosmos in a previous profile, of course. When he moved to America to play, that was signalled an end to his international career. But one he could be very proud of indeed, and he made made 103 appearances for his country, and he became the first German player ever to break through the 100 cap barrier. However, he wasn't done with European football. He had a spell for the Cosmos, and then he came back with Hamburg SV in 1980 to 1982, and he won the Bundesliga title again with them. and then he went back out to the Cosmos to finish off his playing
win some other stuff. Won the sperm race. Let's not forget that.
Yeah.
Coveted trophy.
Yeah,
he probably got to keep that. He probably won it three times.
Yeah,
exactly. Beckenbauer in the 80s was given the West German national manager job, which was quite a big appointment at the time because he had no coaching experience at all. His apprenticeship was served gaining qualification for the 1986 World Cup in Mexico.
Incredible.
So straight in there, and he took not a particularly great side to the final.
Yeah.
Well, they beaten off Argentina.
He went one better 4 years later.
You're absolutely right. In 1990, Germany became undefeated world champions.
It's interesting what you say about him, because I always think of him, and I don't know him obviously personally, but I always remember him as like a man of real dignity and stuff. Yeah. It's interesting what you said about what he said in the 66 World Cup final. Oh, Bobby Charlton was just a little bit better than me, because apparently in the semi-final in World Cup 90, after Germany beat England on penalties, and a couple of the players had to go through for a drugs test, he said that, you know, and I think it was Stuart Pearce or someone said, oh, if it was us and we'd won, we'd be dancing around celebrating. And he said that the two German chaps, I forget who they were, just carried themselves with absolute dignity and sat down, didn't celebrate in their faces, shook their hands, said good game and stuff. And I wonder if Beckenbauer influenced them to do that.
Well, I think Germany have got quite a tradition of doing that. They're very good winners, if you know what I mean.
But
I think Beckenbauer kind of typifies that, really.
Yeah, I agree with that, definitely.
But he became the first man. And he's only one of two. The other is Mario Zagallo, who has won the World Cup as a coach and a player.
Mm-hmm.
As captain and as a coach, should I say. And Beckenbauer said that, I would say 1990 in Italy was the most important to me. It doesn't come any better than managing a side to victory. And after that World Cup, he then had sort of brief manager spells at Marseille. Not particularly successful there. And then he went to Bayern and he guided them to a Bundesliga title and a second brief spell with Bayern. They won the UEFA Cup, and of course he moved upstairs as club president. But I shall end with a quote which I think sums the man up. He said that it is not the strong one that wins. It is the one that wins who is strong.
Mm-hmm. In you come, son.
Come on in, friends.
They always have such fantastic quotes.
Yeah. Imagine hair on the back of your neck stand.
It's not enough that they're incredibly good footballers or managers. It's just they've got to be incredibly well-spoken as well.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of the pod. Once again, I hope you enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch, the email address is podcast@thefootballramble.com. And why not check out our website, which is thefootballramble.com. Luke, there's something interesting happening, though.
Oh, yeah, we've got a range of Dean Windass Hall of Fame-themed T-shirts, courtesy of cultzeros.co.uk. But if you want to go and find them and buy them, whatever, they're very competitively priced, go to thefootballramble.com and it'll be there and you can pick your best one.
Absolutely marvellous. James, you've got something to say.
I have as well. On the 14th of October, my comedy night that I run, which is called Comedy 2.0, is moving to a venue called Punk, which is in Soho Street. It's 14 Soho Street. The nearest tube is Tottenham Court Road.
That's in London.
Yeah, it is in London,
for
obviously.
Our Canadian listeners.
Yeah, but we have a big
big contingent down here in the Big Smoke, so if you want to come along. Patrick Monaghan's performing. He's performing at the Royal Albert Hall soon. He's a very good act. Helen Arney, Colin Holt, Jay Foreman, who's very good, and myself. I am available for corporate work. and, yeah, it's normally £7, because this is a very good lineup. There's some real good circuit acts on there. But if you mention the Football Ramble on the door, it's a mere £3. So if you type Comedy 2.0 into Facebook and join our group, you can get all the details on there. So, yes. See you there.
And spend the money you saved on a T-shirt.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
And Pete, you've got something to plug.
Yeah, do you want to buy a shed? I've got. It's most of a shed, if I'm honest. I mean, it's half creosote. I don't bother. Actually, it's not that great a shed, to be honest. Marcus, do you want to wrap this up? This shit storm up.
If I could, say goodbye, Pete.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, James or Jim.
Bye.
And say goodbye, Luke.
See you later. Bye.
We're all off to tell an autograph hunting teenager to F off.
And why not?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.